So these nine are considered anubhavas. That when a person becomes so inspired in Krishna consciousness, having come to the level of bhava and experiencing how wonderful it is compared to anything one will have experienced prior to that, it is just something completely unique. So the fundamental reaction, the fundamental response to that amazing experience will be that one will become so fully engaged and so nicely engaged in devotional service by manifesting these nine symptoms. They will be like natural responses, natural reactions, immediate natural reactions to experiencing bhava. So now, one of the devotees, though, at the end made the point, and it's a very good point, that even on the level of nishta, wouldn't it be that the devotee would be manifesting these nine symptoms? And the answer would be yes, of course. Nishta means to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. So, therefore, naturally, the devotee who's like that would be manifesting these nine symptoms. But not like the devotee on the level of bhava. In fact, it would not be possible to manifest these symptoms in the same way. If one is not on the level of bhava, if one is not that purified, if one is not experiencing that much of the spiritual potency descending into the heart, it would hardly be possible for someone to act, to manifest these nine qualities on the level of nishta as a person on the level of bhava would do and would naturally do. So let us just go through them and we'll try and give some examples which will illustrate how strongly the person on the level of bhava will be manifesting the particular different characteristics. So the first one is not wasting time. And any serious devotee, of course, any devotee who's trying to be serious will not want to waste time and waste one's human form of life and just become apathetic. Who would want to do that? No one who takes it seriously. But to give an example of how a devotee on the level of bhava would be manifesting the symptom of not wasting time, let me describe to you the daily schedule of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. Now, he was at least on the level of bhava. We would say actually he's on the level of Krishna prema, which includes bhava. So his program was, he would take rest at 4 a.m. It's a little difficult to know where to begin the schedule, actually. But let's just say he would take rest at 4 a.m. and get up at 4:30 and take bath and then chant till 7. And then at 7 he would write letters. 7:30 he would read for an hour till 8:30. 8:30 he would either receive some guests or continue reading to 9:30. At 9:30 in the morning he would take rest again till 9:45. Then he would take breakfast. 1/4 quart of milk. How much is that? Well, that's 1/2 liter, isn't it? I think it's about half a liter of milk, two chapatis and some fruit, and then he would go to court. So, he would be busy. Basically, he would be busy with his court work till five. Of course, this is just, you know, a general type of description. It may not be so precise always, but he would generally, the description here is he would be busy to five with his occupational work, from about 10 till 5. Then, from 5 to 7:30 or so, he would translate. 7:30, he would take an evening meal, evening bath and evening meal. At 8 o'clock at night, he would take rest till 10. And then he would write from 10 till 4. And he would take rest at 4 till 4:30, as we said. So that is quite a schedule. I have seen a few of our ISKCON devotees have schedules, not really exactly like that, but where they would try to reduce their sleeping. That is a very prominent characteristic of the schedule as it's given here. According to this, he would sleep for 2¾ hours out of 24. So I've seen a few devotees try to sleep, you know, 3 or 4 hours or whatever, and maintain that for some time. But I've hardly seen devotees do that successfully on an extended basis. Now, maybe you can correct me. Maybe there are or were or have been some who have successfully maintained a program like that, sleeping for 3 hours or less out of 24. I mean, on an ongoing basis. But frankly, I'm not so aware of such examples being there. Do some of you know of some examples like that? Have you known some devotees who've done things like that? Anyway, let us just say that at least it is quite an exceptional program. And if you're not on a very advanced spiritual level, being empowered by the spiritual potency, in other words, if you're just subject to the normal influences of the typical material body, then you'll probably not be able to do it for long, maybe for a few days, and then you'll find that you're just falling asleep. Whatever you do, even sometimes we've seen devotees fall asleep while taking prasadam. And there are many stories about devotees falling asleep at the wrong times. And even unfortunately, very unfortunately, a number of devotees have died because devotees fell asleep while driving motor cars. So, you know, on one side it can be a little funny seeing someone just sort of falling asleep chronically. On the other hand, it may not be so funny sometimes also. So to be able to function properly and like dynamically on the spiritual platform or on any platform, generally we would say you have to be very advanced to do that with so little sleep. I mean, there have been cases. Someone told me that Michelangelo slept 3 hours a day. Maybe there's some exceptional cases. But we would say that generally you have to be very advanced. Otherwise you can't really do that. Be so deeply and so intensely engaged in devotional service. Prabhupada referred to a statement by Chanakya Pandit that time is the most valuable commodity. If you lose even 1 second of it, you cannot purchase it back for any amount of money. No matter who you are, even if you're, you know, some fantastic multi-billionaire like Bill Gates or someone like that, even if you're like Lord Indra or Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, if you lose even 1 second only, you cannot get it back for any amount of money. So in other words, time is so valuable. And the devotees, they know that. And as the devotees advance more and more, that becomes more and more apparent to them. So they become more and more careful with their use of time. And, well, we just gave the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Probably you're all aware that also Srila Prabhupada, he had a program, something along those lines. Very, very little sleep. From what I've been told by those who were with him on a regular basis, not more than 4 hours out of 24, and often less. Really often less. Raghunath Das Goswami, he would sleep half an hour a day. But often he would forget. He'd be just so fully engaged in his spiritual activities, he'd forget. So that after 3 or 4 days, one of his associates would have to come and inform him that, you know, you haven't slept for a few days. We think you should. It may not be good for you. So, on the level of bhava then, the devotee is extremely attentive in terms of how he or she utilizes their time. And it is not just like on the level of nishta. It is on a higher level. So then the next one, the next example, next characteristic is of perseverance. Determination, in other words. Being willing, and not just willing, but able to go on, to carry on, regardless of the circumstances. Nothing can stop you. Of course, a devotee on the level of nishta. Any good devotee who's trying to take Krishna consciousness seriously will undoubtedly try and do this. They will take their prescribed duty very seriously. After all, Srila Prabhupada did say, there's one letter, Prabhupada says that whatever duty you get through the bona fide system of authority, Prabhupada said that you should take it that Krishna personally wants you to do that. Yes. In other words, it's not just that the authorities just needed someone just to do something and you just happened to be in the wrong place at the right time, and they just grabbed you and you got stuck with that service. It's not really like that. But Krishna is behind it. So any good devotee who's really feeling that my service is a vital part of my connection to Guru and Krishna, they're going to do their service and be willing to push on, even if there is some difficulty. But not necessarily like the devotee on the level of bhava. So in Nectar of Devotion, different examples are given, in most cases, to illustrate the particular characteristic. In the case of perseverance, the example given is that of Maharaj Parikshit. We all know in the first canto, he was cursed to die in 7 days. So he didn't panic. He didn't go into any other state of consciousness. He just became totally focused in his Krishna consciousness. So there's one verse quoted. It's from, I haven't got the reference, but I think it's somewhere in the 19th chapter of the first canto, that Maharaj Parikshit says. Now he's just left home, gone to the Ganges, met all those sages there, and he's just sat down with them. So he says, O Brahmins, just accept me as a completely surrendered soul, and let Mother Ganges, the representative of the Lord, also accept me in that way, for I've already taken the lotus feet of the Lord into my heart. Let the snake bird, or whatever magical thing the Brahmin created, bite me at once. I only desire that you all continue singing the deeds of Lord Vishnu. So he was so perseverant, so determined, that even though he was confronted with this shocking situation by ordinary material standards, cursed to die in 7 days in some very horrible way. But there's no problem. No problem at all. Actually, he's not just saying it, but he's feeling that way because of his advanced Krishna consciousness. Just let the snake bird come now. Doesn't matter. Just let him come. But the main thing is, the only thing is, you just continue glorifying Krishna. That's all. And just let me be absorbed in that, and that's it. That is sufficient. And his perseverance, determination was then shown by the fact that also he didn't waste any time. He didn't sleep. He didn't eat for 7 days. He wasn't nodding off in the Bhagavatam class or anything of that sort. He was in total rapt attention for 7 days and seven nights, just deeply absorbed. So this type of perseverance is there in a devotee on the level of bhava. Then the next one is detachment. And the example given is that of Maharaj Bharat in the fifth canto. And someone brought up the point yesterday. And in fact, Prabhupada states it clearly in the fifth canto. Jiva Goswami talks about it in Bhakti Sandarbha. Bharat Maharaj was specifically on the level of bhava. He was not on the level of prema. Nor was he on the level of asakti. He was actually on the level of bhava. Anyway, he got into some difficulty, that we know. Sort of, that's another thing. We can just say at this point that that's another thing. But here the example is given of his extreme detachment, which is typical of a devotee on the level of bhava, that when the time came, he understood, I should give up my home, and just now I'm in the later part of my life, I should just get out, focus my mind on Krishna, and prepare for the time of death. So when that time came, he simply got up, turned around, walked out, and was gone. Yeah, there was no farewell party or anything like that. No thanking people. It's been nice to know you, and thanks for all the help. Just they just noticed after a while, Bharat Maharaj is not here. So he left. The description, the verse itself says, it's there in the 18th chapter. He left all those things, very beautiful and affectionate and dutiful wife, very nice children, many very nice friends, and extremely opulent situation. You could hardly imagine a better situation materially, even spiritually. Because all those family members and friends and everyone, they were all devotees. But the verse says that he just stood up and left, just left everything behind, just like that. Just as a person leaves stool after passing it. So that is, you know, pretty obvious way, you know, type of idea there, isn't it? He just went, and that was all. No, not one second thought. In fact, you know, after passing stool, one, it's not a matter of being detached, that, you know, somehow I've got to detach myself so I can get away. But you just want to get away. You just want to get away. You wouldn't stay. So it's hardly even, in one sense, a matter of detachment. Or in other words, the detachment is so great that it's like an enthusiasm to get away. So that was Maharaj Bharat. And that is typical of a devotee on the level of bhava. As we mentioned, those family members and friends and so on, they were all devotees. They were very nice. And when I say very nice, I mean they were very nice devotees. But he just left them because he had some higher goal in mind. It wasn't like when we left home. Some of us left home. We left our parents. Some of you may have left a husband or wife behind to take for the sake of Krishna consciousness. But I don't think that they were devotees who loved you, I mean, in a Krishna conscious sense, and who intended all the best for you in Krishna consciousness, but still you left them for a higher goal, for a higher purpose. I don't think so. Most parents are a bit on the sort of crummy side, you know, materialistic parents, you know, they're really not that exciting. And to renounce them, it's not such a big act of renunciation in many cases. And if you take to Krishna consciousness and your husband or wife becomes like totally cranky about it and insists on staying on the material platform and being antagonistic to Krishna consciousness or something, then it may not be such a big act of detachment to leave them. But just imagine with the gopis, their parents, what to speak of being nice devotees, they were all on the level of Krishna prema. They also loved Krishna, but still the gopis abandoned them. So what sort of detachment is that? That's a much higher level of detachment than being detached from some relatives or whoever who are just not very nice anyway, who may be like obstacles to your Krishna consciousness or to what you really want in life. You know, to be detached enough to leave that behind is not a big act of detachment. But Bharat Maharaj, he was so detached, even though his situation was materially practically perfect like a demigod, and spiritually wonderful, surrounded by pure devotees, but still for a higher purpose, he was able to detach himself, and not just able to, but just like a person leaves stool after passing it, that's very detached. Great hope. Prabhupada says there, That's the fifth. Oh, no, sorry. The fourth is humility or pridelessness. There are a couple of examples given there. One is of a famous devotee, famous around here in Vrindavan, Lal Babu. There's a temple which he constructed down, it's near the Gopeshwar temple, sort of, down near the Brahmakund. Very nice temple. Lal Babu, he's still known around here. He was living maybe 200 years ago. He was previously a landlord in Calcutta, and not a very nice landlord. He was the sort of landlord that if you missed your rent by one day, he wouldn't give you a chance. Even if, you know, you had dependent children and it was like a super tough situation, if you let him down by even one day, he'd just have you booted out. He'd call the mafia on you and take the clothes off your body to put towards any rent that you hadn't paid and just leave you in the street with your children and everything and kill people. So he was like a very vicious businessman. And he had many enemies. But then somehow at some point, he had a change of heart. He became a devotee. And he just renounced everything. He took sannyas or like Babaji, something like that, on the spot. And went from being, you know, maybe like a billionaire to rags, voluntarily. Voluntarily. And then, in order to help himself develop the mood, because he's a Gaudiya Vaishnav, the mood of Trinada Pisanichena, Tarora Pisahishnuna, to break some of that false ego from being such a big rich man. So he adopted a special sadhana. His sadhana was he would locate his old enemies and the people he abused and ripped off and cheated and so on and so forth. And he would go and beg from them. He would introduce himself. Do you remember me? I'm that Lal Babu. And he would apologize to them and then beg. And he would get beaten sometimes. And, you know, cursed and sworn at and all sorts of horrible, horrible encounters he had. But he persevered. He kept on for some time until he came here to Vrindavan and just stayed here. Because he wanted to break his false ego. So there's one story how he went to one old enemy, knocked on the door, and the man came to the door and saw, oh, it's Lal Babu. And what is he doing dressed like this? Like a Babaji. So Lal Babu explained and said, you know, I'm so sorry how I mistreated you. And I've come to beg something from you. Could you give me some charity? Now that man was also a mean businessman. And he never used to give any charity to anyone. But with Lal Babu, he said, all right. Yes, I think I can give you something. Just wait here, don't go away. So he went into the house and from the fireplace took a whole lot of ashes, like a whole bucket or box full of ashes, and came out and tipped them over the head, all over Lal Babu. It was just a horrible mess. And Lal Babu said, thank you. At least you have started giving. So Prabhupada gives that example. That's Prabhupada's example because in the time of Rupa Goswami, Lal Babu, he was not around yet. So then the next one, number five, is great hope. And Prabhupada gives a definition. It's very nice. The strong conviction that one will certainly receive the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called in Sanskrit Ashabandha. Ashabandha means to continue to think. Because I'm trying my best to follow the routine principles of devotional service, I'm sure that I'll go back to Godhead, back to home, despite being me. You know, despite being not a very impressive devotee, really. Something like that. So then, Srila Rupa Goswami, in his description of this point, he has written a special verse. Actually, it's interesting. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, I don't know if any of you have, in the meantime, looked in the 23rd chapter of the Madhya Lila, but Lord Chaitanya, he is describing the subject of bhava, and he does it in exactly the same way. He gives that verse which I read yesterday, which lists out these same qualities. And for each quality, he gives a verse or an example. So it's the same verse. This is, in other words, given by Lord Chaitanya himself. The same verse which you find there in the 18th chapter of Nectar of Devotion, except in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I must say, there is a slightly clearer translation. There's one element in the verse which doesn't come through so clearly in the Nectar of Devotion translation. So I'm just going to read the translation from the Madhya Lila, chapter 23, verse 29. It's the same verse. O my Lord, I do not have any love for you, nor am I qualified for the discharging of discharging devotional service by chanting and hearing. Nor do I possess the mystic power of a Vaishnav, knowledge or pious activities. Nor do I belong to a very high caste family. On the whole, I do not possess anything. Still, O beloved of the gopis, because you bestow your mercy on the most fallen, I have an unbreakable hope that is constantly in my heart. That hope is always giving me pain. So, the particular element which we pick up in this translation is the fact that Krishna, according to the verse, is Hina Artha Adhika Sadhake, one who bestows greater benedictions upon those who have fallen rather than those who are not fallen. So, yeah. Now, there are many poems. I have one here by Rupa Goswami, in which he is expressing the same mood of hope. If we have time at the end, maybe I'll read it. It is quite dramatic. It would also take about 5 minutes to read, so we'll just hold on, I think, on that. But the basic idea is that the devotee on the level of bhava is feeling extreme humility, but at the same time, tremendously hopeful. Why? Knowing that Krishna is Patita Pavana. So if I just hang in there somehow, then he'll be merciful to me, despite me being me and having my disqualifications and so on. So that, those like extremes of humility on one hand and feeling of almost hopelessness on one hand, but still there's great hope on the other hand because Krishna's so wonderful. This can really only be there with a very advanced devotee. Then eagerness for achieving the desired success. There's a verse by Bilva Mangal Thakur. It's not just about being eager to be successful on book distribution, for example. In other words, just to be successful in our day-to-day service. But the idea is to be successful in meeting Krishna. The devotee on the level of bhava is driven by this eagerness to achieve the complete success of life, to meet Krishna face to face. That type of eagerness is there, and this is what Bilva Mangal Thakur is expressing. Attachment to chanting the holy names. The example is of Srimati Radharani, who of course is also well beyond the level of bhava. Now, it's a nice verse, but again, the same verse is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Same verse. But there is a little bit sort of more finer translation. It's very nice. Just listen to this. O Govinda, this youthful girl named Radhika is today constantly pouring forth tears like nectar falling from flowers as she sings your holy names in a sweet voice. So it's the same verse, which is there in Nectar of Devotion, but just a little bit more poetic presentation. So she is singing Krishna's holy names with such attachment and eagerness for that chanting that it's like nectar falling from flowers. That's what it's like, is coming out of her mouth. You know, we may, of course there are different levels, anything from sort of cranking out 16 rounds and somehow getting them done, to the level of actually enjoying it and being, you know, not feeling happy that, boy, finished my rounds, good. But actually to be happy to go on and to just chant and just go on chanting. But still, it's not quite like we're tasting some nectar. Of course, it depends what you would call nectar. But here we're talking about something very amazing. That taste of the chanting is very incredible for the devotee on the level of bhava. Therefore, they're so eager. They can chant 24 hours in a day. That's not enough. Prabhupada says such a devotee would think, why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000? Yes. So that's a very advanced level. That's the level of bhava. Then eagerness to describe the glories of the Lord. This is a verse by, actually I can't remember who. Is it Bilva Mangal Thakur, or it may be Vallabhacharya, actually. It's that verse, Maduram. There is one very nice verse. It is, anyway, it's the verse which is there. Actually, it's a verse from Lord Chaitanya. Maduram, maduram, vapur asya vibhor. Maduram, maduram, vadanam, maduram. Madugandhi mridu smitam etad aho. Maduram, 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 maduram. Incidentally, maduram means sweet. So something is obviously extremely sweet here. Like just so sweet, it's sort of, you know, overwhelming. So the translation is, O my Lord, the transcendental body of Krishna is very sweet, and his face is even sweeter than his body. But his soft smile, which has the fragrance of honey, is sweeter still. Not just sweeter still, but maduram, 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 maduram. So that's really sweeter still. So that is the eagerness of the devotee on the level of bhava, to glorify the Lord. How wonderful is Krishna! Then finally, attraction for living in a place of the Lord's pastimes. Well, that can be to live in Vrindavan. That can be to live in a temple of Krishna. That can be to make your ordinary home a temple. But it means a staunch attachment to living in a transcendental environment. As Prabodhananda Saraswati says, unfortunately I haven't got the verse right here, but he says about living in Vrindavan, if someone tries to take me out, I will kill them. So that's what we call being attracted. Attracted to living in the place of the Lord's pastimes. Yes, if someone tries to drag me away, I'll kill them. If someone says something against Vrindavan, I'll cut out their tongue. Yes. So he's obviously on the level of bhava, or maybe beyond that even. So the point we're trying to get at is that these nine characteristics, nine qualifications, they are, you know, like very dramatically present, overwhelmingly present in extremely powerful ways in devotees who are on the level of bhava. You know, in devotees like us who are kind of, you know, making our way, trying to make our way in Krishna consciousness, we may have some of them or whatever it may be to some degree, but not like that. Not like that at all, generally. Maybe sometimes little flashes, but not like that. But the devotee on the level of bhava has all of them always, very prominently, very amazingly present in his or her character. And these are the first symptoms, and like the most important symptoms of being on the level of bhava. Any comments or questions? Oh, it's the order is different. In the verse, the order is different. That means perseverance. Yeah. Shantir. Yeah, Prabhupada put the first and second around the other way. Avyata kalatvam means to utilize your time. So according to the verse, that appears second, but Prabhupada gives it as the first. I don't think there's any... I mean, Prabhupada doesn't say there's a particular significance, but, you know, like the six characteristics in the first chapter of Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada also gives them in a different order to how they appear in the verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, so it's not really such a big deal, but they're all there. Yeah, but when you go through and find the example, you'll see it's in terms, it is this specific example of Maharaj Parikshit. Because you know that it's in a sense a type of forgiveness, perseverance. It has the element of shanti, like being peaceful and unaffected by circumstances like that. Any other comment or question, Madhuji? Aha. Yes. Well, look, I can read this. It will take at least 5 minutes. Do you have 5 minutes? All right. It might even take 10 minutes. Because it's 45 verses, short verses. Each one is generally one or two sentences. So, okay. So, this is very deep. It's not totally dissimilar to the verses we read from Vilapka Sumanjali last night of Raghunath Das Goswami. Not quite as conjugal, but it's still, the same elements are there. The same elements are there. But it is particularly illustrating this mood of great hope, like hope against hope, sort of, but still great hope, unbreakable hope, despite, many serious problems, but the great hope is there. Okay, it's very poetic, and it begins with 10 verses glorifying Radha and Krishna. So just listen carefully, and actually it's extremely beautiful. I think it'll be very enriching if you can absorb it into your hearts. So this is now Karpanya Panjika. Are you familiar with that? Okay, anyway, it's Karpanya Panjika. Karpanya means miserliness. Karpanya dosho pahata swabhava, as Arjuna says in Bhagavad Gita. So Rupa Goswami is saying, well, panjika, I was trying to figure out, why has he used the word panjika? Because it means something like a calendar. Anyway, that's what he called it. So listen to this. A very poor man living in Vrindavan forest presents the following appeal at the lotus feet of Vrindavan's king and queen. O king, whose luster eclipses the splendor of newly blossomed blue lotus flowers. O queen, whose fair complexion devours the intense pride of yellow Garochana. O king, whose splendid garments mock the beauty of golden Kadamba flowers. O queen, whose splendid garments eclipse the glory of red Kimshuka flowers. O king, who is the sapphire crown of all youths. O queen, who is the jasmine flower crown in the decorated braids of all the girls in Vraja. O king, whose transcendental form is the most handsome of all forms of the personality of Godhead. O queen, whose beauty fills with wonder the girls of Vraja, who are all more beautiful than the goddess of fortune. O king, whose fragrance captivates Srimati Radharani. O queen, whose fragrance maddens Lord Madhava. O king, whose flute stuns Srimati Radharani. O queen, whose veena charms infallible Krishna. O king, whose restless sidelong glances are the thief that steals Radha's peacefulness. O queen, whose bumblebee sidelong glance bites the lotus of Krishna's heart. O king, who made no reply to Radha's mysterious jokes. O queen, the hairs of whose vine-like form stood erect with joy as you heard the prince of Vraja's joking words. O king, whose splendid transcendental virtues are an eternally growing mountain of rubies. O queen, whose many transcendental virtues are desired by Parvati and all other beautiful girls. O king of Vrindavan, O queen of Vrindavan, bowing down before you with a choked voice, this foolish person appeals to you. Although I am not worthy to receive your mercy, please be merciful to me, for you are the crown jewels of all who are merciful. O King and Queen, worshipped by the masters of all the worlds, they who are very merciful are filled with kindness, even for the unworthy and even for the offenders. Although I have not the dimmest shadow of pure devotion, which is the only way to attain you, still, because you are the masters of playful, transcendental pastimes, please be merciful to me. O my King and Queen, in this world many powerful controllers and many playful persons are seen to be merciful to the impious and indifferent. Although I am the lowest and you are the highest, although I am a fool and you are the greatest philosophers, although I am wicked and you are the most saintly, and although I commit offenses when I think of you, still, O King and Queen, the shadow of whose holy names delivers one from a host of sins, please be kind to this person who sometimes chants your holy names. The most unpardonable sin is made non-existent by a small particle of devotion to you. This makes me hopeful. For this reason, I now appeal to you. Although this living entity is a cowardly eunuch, intense pain has now made him bold. O King and Queen, again and again he appeals to you. Please be kind to him. Loudly crying and taking a straw between his teeth, this sinful soul begs, O King and Queen, please be kind. Calling out, alas, alas, this unfortunate person begs, please hear my appeal. O King and Queen, please hear my appeal. Filled with anguish, and again calling out, alas, alas, I beg, O oceans of mercy, please be kind to this unworthy person. Placing his face in his hands, this person cries out in grief, O King and Queen, please, please, give a small drop of your mercy. Crying, I, who am a great fool, beg in a piteous voice, O merciful King and Queen, please splash me with your waves of mercy. To they whose hearts are filled with sweet, ecstatic devotion, you mercifully give sweet, pure love. O King and Queen, I wish only to serve you. I do not wish anything else. Please be kind to me. O King and Queen, who are kind to the shelterless, please be kind to this person and grant the direct service he begs. Folded palms placed on his head, this poor person begs, may my desire now be fulfilled. When, coming through the forest, will your splendid fragrance overwhelm my nose with immeasurable happiness? When will the musical tinkling of your anklets, which shames the swan's warbling, delight my ears? When, seeing in Vrindavan forest your footprints, bearing a chariot wheel and other auspicious signs, will this person become mad with joy? O King and Queen, whose lotus feet are the worshipable ultimate limit of all beauty, will you place these unprecedented joyful festivals before my eyes? O Lords, the sight of whose lotus feet I have for a long time yearned to see, will this person be able to directly see you in this birth? O splendid King and Queen, when will I see you enjoying amorous pastimes nearby in the groves and caves of Vrindavan forest? O King and Queen, who, out of fear of your superiors, rarely see each other, when will I delight you with the nectar of each other's letters. When, as you search for each other in Vrindavan forest, will I bring you together and receive from you an excellent gift as a reward? When will I, holding the fresh garland intended as the victor's prize, see your dispute as you both claim victory in the gambling match? When, as you lay on the bed of flowers, will this person massage your feet? When will you order me to repair the necklaces broken during your amorous battle in the cottage of vines? O king and queen of Vrindavan, when will I decorate your hair with peacock feathers, the previous decorations having been washed away by the waves of your pastimes? When will I apply splendid tilak markings to your foreheads, the previous decorations broken by your great skill in amorous pastimes? O king, when will I decorate your chest with forest flower garlands? O queen, when will I decorate your eyes with black kajal? When will this person decorate you in the garden temple? When will this person break golden beetle leaves and place them in your mouths? What am I? I am a sinful man. How can I make such requests? But who will not become maddened by your transcendental sweetness? O king and queen, by the same mercy that allows this unworthy person to reside in Vrindavan, please fulfill his desires. O king and queen who dance in Vrindavan forest, may the desires of a person who repeatedly recites this Karpanya Panjika become fulfilled. Srila Rupa Goswami Ki. Hare Krishna. All right. I think we'll close on that note for this evening. And tomorrow we will actually begin chapter 20. Hare Krishna.